Und schon mal nach der Bibliothek gekommen.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Hartman, member of the committee presenting. Okay. Sanbuna. My name is Patrick Zibande from Mpumalanga Province, representing this committee. Thank you. Jacob Maroga, not the member of this committee. Welcome.
My name is Andrew Shaw, representative of the Department of Public Enterprises.
I'm Edwin Bepa, DCE.
Alison Crooks. Alison Crooks, SAA representing procurement and petroleum affairs.
Bob Nami, SAA representing corporate communications.
Anastasia Matroni, the Deputy Manager in the Office of the Chairperson.
Cheryl Canales, Chairperson of SAA Board.
Chris Fox, Acting CEO. Kaushik Patel, CFO, SAA.
Vera Kriel, Corporate Strategy and Business Planning.
Kabi Lyon, ESCOM. Sir Mandiwana, TBE.
Quinton Cadet from TNG.
Okay, thank you. Since now we know each other, we do have honorable members. We have SAA and ESCOM with us today. We will start with SAA. We give them around 30 minutes to present, and then questions, then thereafter, then ESCOM. We started with the easiest. No, the other way around, maybe. So we won't waste time. And we'll just go straight away to the presentation, and then we engage with SAA, and then you can leave us in peace with ESCOM, but otherwise, if you want to sit with them, give them the support, then you can do so. Over to you, SAA.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I must say that I come here as a AD from the board. We were just given our marching orders by DPE on Monday. So we are going to plead for some indulgence. But no, seriously, the new board has only just had its induction and had its first meeting on Monday. So we are babies. But we are very excited about the challenge, and we feel quite humbled to have been asked to serve on such an important national effort. We are quite aware, as we said, we have been inducted by GPE. SAA still needs to take us another 35 because they said we have to go to airships for a meal. So I don't know what that entails, but we are supposed to do that. The new board is quite aware of the fact that we are facing a number of challenges. And we are aware of the fact that SAA has just gone through quite an extensive restructuring process, and we obviously have to take over in that whole process, but we are really happy to see some of the results, which I think the colleagues here will share with you. We also know that the previous board had picked up some systemic weaknesses and had in fact taken a few steps, most importantly, to appoint an outside service provider who could in fact, in the form of KPMG, who could identify those weaknesses, and the new board is quite committed to be seized with immediately addressing those matters, and we've already started that process. We also aware that we are sitting with a situation where the House might well be interested in some of the steps that we are taking for the restructuring, and we really would like to urge the members to be partners with us in this process because we want to fix it. We believe that the challenges and some of the weaknesses which have been picked up are serious ones, but we're also quite convinced they're systemic, and it's a question of being firm enough to address them. We will keep the House fully appraised, obviously, and we believe that the process should be concluded by the end of the year, the whole KPMG process, and then it's a question of fixing it. It's obviously quite an important thing for us because next year is 2010. We believe the airline is a critical player in fact, maximizing the benefits for our country, and we are determined to make sure that as we go into the last few weeks before the arrival of the first passengers, that the airline will be significantly on its way to, in fact, have fixed it. But we also in the process for the recruitment of a CEO, and we think it's not good for the institution to be leaderless, and so we are also applying our minds quite seriously and with a lot of urgency to conclude that whole process. I must say the previous board has started that process and have made significant progress on that, so it's really not about to look at whether we believe that the candidates that have come up in the process are the ones that can meet the challenges that we need. So, Honourable Chair members, I can just say that we are proud to be called to serve a national asset like this. It is an asset that we believe we should all be proud of. We are winning international awards every year in a space that is highly competitive. So while there are serious challenges, we believe that the overarching picture which we wish the House to embrace together with us is the fact that this is an international, high-standard asset, and we want you to join us in making sure that we fix the bits that are broken, but to bear in mind that, in fact, by and large, this is an international award-winning airline. It is an important national asset. It is a critical component of what we need to do in terms of building this country. So with that, Honourable Chair and members, I'm going to hand over to the CEO, who together with the Chief Financial Officer will in fact take us through the high-level presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, but also before, let me congratulate you on your appointment as the chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I hopefully it isn't the poison one, but we will... I'm sure we have a lot of fun building on restructuring, which is the byline of this particular presentation. The presentation consists of three basic parts. We'll take a look at the industry, at the company itself, and the environment, specifically the operational environment in which we're currently operating. I'll then go through an adapted statement of performance, which is a form of income statement which shows you the real numbers and where they actually are driven from, and then my colleague, my CFO, will then go through the statutory accounts, and we'll come back and talk through the conclusions and what we see is the immediate future of the airline. I think that starting with the, and I do apologize, I take cognizance of the greenness of our presentation. It wasn't supposed to be green, it was supposed to be purple, but you might find some odd colors there. I think it's a color channel missing in the presentation, but it certainly looks nice green, I must admit. The industry we find ourselves in is no different from any other industry in the world at the moment, but more, probably a little more severely hit in a cyclical downturn, an economic downturn that has not been seen since 1929. Along with automobiles, property, airlines have been severely hit, not only because of the downturn itself, but because of the impact of the oil price, peaking at more than $147 during the financial review in which we are reporting. I think it must be understood that this is particularly important because, unlike any other industry that I know, Fuel represents roughly 30 to 40% and in time 50% of our total expense base. And there are very few industries other than service industries that have that kind of single expense that drives the business so dramatically. And certainly no other industry that has a single expense that's as volatile as fuel. This is a major challenge for airlines. The estimate that I heard Giovanni Bisignani, who's the CEO of IATA, IATA being the body, the international body that major airlines belong to, was that the industry itself would lose 11 billion. He has since revised that 2 weekends ago to 15 billion. I think the previous record was around about 6 to 7 billion. This is the biggest single crisis the industry has faced. And what's happened throughout the world is you've seen closure of some 50-odd airlines. More than 50. Every day we hear of more closures. We've seen airlines grounding aircraft. The Mojave Desert, and I believe also I've been told yesterday, that even in the Uppington area, there are numbers of airlines that are grounded in areas of the world that are dry and hot. We've seen routes could discontinue. We've seen frequencies reduced. We've seen airlines merging with each other in an attempt to survive. Air France and KLM, for example. Northwest and NASA. Another example. There are a number of major mergers in an attempt to survive. South African Airways is lucky in that it is being somewhat protected by two reasons. One is that we are a large player in Africa, and the African continent has yet to feel the kind of pain that the rest of the world has felt. The second reason is 2 years ago, the company had the foresight, and I guess was lucky enough to decide to restructure at a time when the industry was booming. And it gave us, that boom period gave us the headroom to be able to go through a particularly difficult period, which allowed us to rebuild the airline in a way that it can survive going forward. The restructuring program really has three areas. We spoke about global initiatives, and much of this has been in the press, but we grounded the 747s, which are no longer profitable. We reduced headcount right across the board, from senior management, where we reduced the management cadre by about a third, from 600 people down to 400 people. We reduced staff overall by 2,000. Fortunately, we didn't have to retrench a single soul, so nobody left involuntarily. Everybody left with the package that was offered to them under a voluntary retrenchment basis. We improved our operational performance dramatically, because that in itself reduces the cost of operation. It also improves the customer service level and brings back revenue. And you'll see slides that actually back that up. On the revenue side, we've been able to attack the two elements of revenue. You know, revenue is derived from both numbers of people and from the price they pay. We've been able to increase our share of our own market to the same level in many areas as most airlines would have of their own home share. For example, we have a similar share now of the South African market as, for example, Qantas may have with the Australian market, or Lufthansa might have with the German market. We've also, you'll see later on, managed to push yields up. Yields is the airline terminology for the average collection per passenger carried per kilometre. And we've done that without increasing pricing. We've done that by simply making sure we attract the right kind of passenger. We don't lose the passenger who's prepared to pay more for flexibility to the opposition, for example. So the average price collected has gone up quite dramatically, very dramatically in fact, without necessarily increasing pricing. And then the last one is the departmental initiatives, which is really about driving costs out of the business, driving duplicate work out, making sure that everybody is measured properly, and making sure they're held accountable for expenditure that's unnecessary and wasteful. And we looked at every contract that we've had historically in the airline, and those contracts, where necessary, have been renegotiated. The one example I'd like to give is that we fly 4 wide-bodied aircraft, large A340 aircraft, a day through Dakar on the way to the US. At one point, we discovered we were paying the highest of all airlines for a turnaround cost in Dakar. We're now paying the lowest. So those sort of things were driven out of the business. The result was that we managed to achieve, against a target of 2.3 billion, and this is a target set by management consultants, and I'm sure Jacob would agree with me, when management consultants set restructuring targets, they set them at impossible levels. Otherwise, they leave savings on the table. We exceeded our target by 200 million, so we end up with a saving of 2.5. And what's important is that saving is demonstrated in the financial results that we will show you today. So on an overview basis, we were extremely fortunate to begin that restructuring in 2007. If we're not done, sir, there would be no SAA. There's no doubt about that. We would not have survived this downturn. The only reason why we have been able to survive is because we have made a business that is able to sustain a downturn. The first phase of the restructuring is now over. That was the hard phase. I don't mean the difficult phase. I mean the hard issues, costs, revenue, operational performance, and so on. Now it's time to look at the soft issues, the way we treat our customers, where our efficiencies work, and to make sure that what we've achieved in the past remains sustainable. One of the big problems that SAA had in the past, and it has been through this kind of process a number of times before with different consultants, but the problem in the past was we did not embed those savings. We allowed them to snap back to the bad old ways, like an elastic band, let go. The difference with this initiative was to make sure from step one until now, everything we did was something that would remain in place, would remain sustainable. That nothing we saved was recorded unless it was sustainable. Once our savings were taken and discarded, but everything we've done, that full $2.5 billion has been audited by Ernst & Young and certified by them as being fully sustainable for the future. If you look at the operational performance, just as an anecdotal slide, you'll see that over time, with the you see the blue slide, the very light blue slide, and that's the one with, you can see it's in the middle there, the blue light blue slide shows, light blue line shows roughly 80%, between sort of 70 and 80% on-time performance. The dark blue side line shows roughly the same, with this tail off that occurred towards December. Then 2 years ago, 2007, which we started our restructuring, we had an all-time low in March of 64%. And then from then, we took this on as a specific project within the initiative, the restructuring initiative. You can see the results. Went from 54 to 65 to 75, and it stayed there constant, and it climbed, and today it's over 90%. And I can tell you that the year-to-date for October, and AXA confirmed these numbers for me a week ago, South African Airways has the highest average on-time performance out of all domestic airlines in the country. And that is difficult to achieve if you're a network airline where you're connecting with overseas passengers coming in, because you have to wait for them if those stand delayed. It's much easier for a low-cost carrier to do because they wait for nobody. So we're quite proud of that achievement. Over time, this is a 7-year on-time performance graph. You can see in the past, between like 2002 and 2005, we were running at world averages of 85, which is, you know, it's pretty much the average for the world. Then we fell, and we fell because we brought Africa into our network. Africa brought a huge amount of benefit, but it also brought its problems. For a number of reasons, running Africa routes are difficult, they're problematic. First of all, we carry a high percentage of trader traffic. Traders carry huge amounts of baggage with them, and handling that baggage is difficult. Second thing is we are operating in and out of airports that don't see or don't operate at the same efficiency levels as South African airports do. But you'll see we fixed it. We managed to work through those problems and to turn it back to where we should be, with Africa included in the effort. Operational statistics, you probably see the years of 2007, 8 and 9, and the percentage between 2007 and 8, and the percentage between 2007 and 9. What this picture tells you is the airline has shrunk quite dramatically. You'll see that capacity, the word ASK means available seat kilometres, which effectively means how far we carry, how many seats we carry for 1 kilometre. So, for example, if you're carrying 10,000 kilometres flat and you're carrying 100 seats, that's 1 million seat kilometres. So we have reduced by approximately 11 to 12% over the past 2 years, mainly because of the grounding of the 747s, which were no longer profitable. The result knocked on into the number of passengers we carry, but you'll see in the current year we've lost more passengers than we reduced capacity. And that is reflected if you look at the load factors. Load factors is what airlines use as a term for what hotels call occupancy rates. In other words, what percentage of your seats are full or have passengers on board. And you'll see it dropped from 75 down to 73, purely because of the economic climate. Passengers carried also seen a drop of 11 to 12%. Cargo has been decimated. You see another 33 or 30% drop, in fact 35% drop in 2 years. But this is a worldwide phenomenon. Cargo rates, cargo volumes throughout the world have dropped by over 40%. But the good news, the silver lining to the cloud, is what I referred to before. Because of the restructuring, we were able to be more efficient in the pricing collection of our revenue. And you'll see that in the same period, we've increased our average yield from 56 cents for each passenger carry 1 kilometre just close from 80 cents, and that's an increase of nearly 40%. And that's what's kept us going, and that's what's actually turned it around. Let's have a quick look at the, sorry, I haven't put these into the site, we've started to put these in the morning to try and give a sense of where our revenue comes. You'll see over 70% of our revenue is sold to people in South Kent. I'm talking about domestic revenue. The second biggest province is, as you would expect, the Western Cape, which is 17%, followed by KZN, which is at 8%, 3% to the Eastern Cape, and then the rest are very small. But to be fair, we only really, SAA only flies to those four major provinces. It doesn't fly to the smaller ones. Some of the HR numbers, Gauteng, again, as you would expect, has by far the majority of our staff, but you'll see there, without going through them in detail, what staffing is sourced or based in the various areas. We have 88 pilots, for example, based in the Western Cape. We have another 22 based in KZN. We have 268 ground staff based in the Western Cape. And I'll leave you for a couple of seconds just to do that information. So pretty much we've spread ourselves amongst the four provinces to which we fly. But if I can go to the financial performance, despite the fact that we reduced passengers and we reduced our revenue passenger kilometres, our turnover has still increased by nearly 30% over 2 years, from 20 million to 26 billion. And that's driven mainly in passenger side. You'll see our passenger revenue up by 11% last year, 20% this year. And again, driven by improved pricing. Cargo revenue has dropped because of a huge drop in tonnage. Other revenue, my colleague will talk about in more detail, but the major driver within other revenue this year is our technical department, which gained the count of Comair. We are now maintaining all Comair's aircraft, and that's added a fair amount of turnover to our technical division. Costs have gone up from 5% last year and 10% this year. So that's a little bit misleading for a number of reasons. First reason is we have very little control over the energy costs. You know, you fly your aircraft in the most efficient way, controlled by computers that sit by manufacturing recommendations. There's not a huge amount more we can do. And so we're at the mercy of the fuel price. And as you can see, the fuel price went up by 40%, 45% of the price over 2 years. It's a huge increase. But it's nearly 3 billion rand increase that we had to bear. And that would be somewhere in the region of about 15-16% of our turnover wiped out. Now, if you think of the average business has a margin of between 5 and 10% of the bottom line, if your major expense goes about 15% of turnover, it's extremely difficult to recover. On the rest of the costs, we held pretty flat, 1% to 2%. But there's also another element that's important to mention here. The RAND dropped by a significant amount, I think it was around about 30% over 2 years. And a large proportion of our expenses, other expenses, including aircraft leases, including the costs of keeping stations open, including landing fees outside of South Africa, are all foreign currency based. So they've all been hit quite hard by a 10% increase in foreign currency. So the reality is, if you use this in unaffected foreign exchange change terms, that's a reduction, and that's where we see the savings. Operating profit. This is profit before any other costs and any other extraordinary or abnormal items. In other words, this is the profit that is generated by the heart of the airline, by the operations of the airline. We went from a loss of 650 last year to a break-even, sorry, loss of 650 2 years ago, break-even last year, and 1.9 billion profit this year. So there is your 2.5 billion. If you add, move from 650 to 1.9 billion, it's 2.5. So what the auditors have certified project by project in the restructuring is actually reflected in these accounts quite clearly. The next item is the financial costs, and we're talking here about the cost of interest, the cost of hedge premiums for fuel, and a number of other financial costs like discontinued operations and so on. And the profit or loss, before we go there, the line that then comes after that is what I call the normalized profit. This is the profit that we would have before other once-off restructuring and other once-off unexpected items. So the airline's gone from a billion loss to 1.5 billion profit at that level. There are two items that take a tremendous amount away from that. The first one, take the three items that affect that, all of which are once-off. There's the hedging losses this year. The hedging losses are extraordinary. My colleague will talk a bit more about that. But they're extraordinary because the movement in the fuel price in itself was extraordinary. We've never seen the kind of swing in the fuel price that we see now. And, you know, that has a huge, huge impact on, on our bottom line. Unfortunately, it wipes out a significant portion of the normalized operational costs. Last year and this year, we had the restructuring costs, which were a significant portion of which were funded by loans from government. And that leaves us our disclosed profit before one further item, which I'll talk about now, where we've turned the airline around from a loss of 1 billion last year to effectively a breaking 10 million rand loss this year. The last item is really a prior year issue. We were able, after some long negotiation, to settle the Airbus dispute. I can talk a bit more about that later, but we have reaffirmed the Airbus order, which was cancelled in 2004. And in doing that reaffirmation, we were able to delay it for another 2 to 3 years until the delivery starts in 2013 and finishes in 2015. And we have taken additional aircraft, and we've done a leasing agreement with Airbus to take new aircraft for old aircraft, which are going back next year. So all in all, it's a significantly favourable solution for SAA. It also, from an accounting point of view, enabled us to reverse the deposits we have paid in 2002 and 2003, which had previously been written off because we've cancelled the deal. I mean, typically, if you cancel a deal with a manufacturer, they will retain the deposits. But because we reaffirmed the deal, those deposits can now come back into the balance sheet, and they come back to the income statement. So the statutory accounts, which my colleague will talk about, will show a profit of 398 million compared to a loss of 1.085 last year. I'd like to hand over to my colleague now to go through the formal statutory, and then I'll talk a bit later about the future.
Thank you very much, Chris. As Chris has indicated, this is the statutory set of financials that you will be seeing in the accounts. The way it is presented in this book will be what you see up there. In essence, basically, Chris has talked about the airline income and operating costs. I'm not going to delve much into that, other than to say that you can see the turnaround has reflected an operating profit sitting at 1.9 billion, 1907, that is on the financials in 2009. You will also note that Chris talked about the hedging position being 1046. The difference between 1046 and what you see in the financials, 1564, relates to options premiums and also restatement of all the foreign currency assets and liabilities at the closing rate, which has to be shown under the fair value translation figures. Also, what is reflected is net finance cost. It's actually a recovery. The reason why it is a net finance income is because of the fact that we've received a subordinated loan towards the end of the previous financial year, and that was placed with various banks, and therefore interest received exceeded the interest paid. The next two items being taxation and discontinued operations, a very small item, so we won't go into much detail in that. Taxation being purely deferred taxation, being a difference between accounting and tax position. Looking at airline income, into the greater detail in terms of the split of the total airline income, you will notice that the total airline income increased by 19%. The biggest driver behind that is passenger revenue. In terms of passenger revenue, there were three factors, one being the prices that we had charged to customers, two being the fuel levy, and three being the currency that impacted in terms of that 20% increase. IATA reported that basically cargo revenues have dropped in excess of 40% worldwide. And from that perspective, we were also impacted to the extent that our tonnage decreased by 26%. Against that, we increased our price of 10%, and that's why you see a net position in terms of the 08-09 year in the variance of 12%. Technical services is the pride and joy of our airline. We have a reputation with regards to providing good technical services, and from that perspective, you will see that we also increased our services to COME, where we service the engines, which increased their level from 20,000 hours to 39,000 hours. On operating costs, you will see that the operating costs increased only by 4%, and this is due to the inflationary impacts as well as currency impact in terms of most of the items. Energy has been discussed in detail by Chris, and from that perspective, you will see that in essence, the other categories that you see there is a 6% increase in terms of the three categories there, and that is predominantly as a result of exchange rate differences. Airline lease costs decreased because we obviously had a reduced fleet, the 747s being grounded. Hedging, Chris mentioned earlier that hedging is an important factor. It is an important arsenal in terms of any company based on the fact that you have to manage volatility, and from that perspective, we have that as in the arsenal within our business as well. Hedging, when we compare ourselves to the international benchmark, we are certainly very conservative in terms of our hedging. We hedge 40 to 60% in terms of fuel, and in terms of currency, 50 to 75%. Industry norm is in excess of 80%, so certainly reflecting a conservative position. Balance sheet, the balance sheet certainly strengthened to a certain extent because of the improved results. What you will see that the loans, you know, we have been saying up to now that we want to decrease our debt, and you will see that the loan has come down by 439 million in terms of long-term loans. Similarly, if you see the cash position also has weakened because of settling some of the loans and also because of the 747 grounding and the derivative instruments that had to be settled. From an income, from an equity position, you will see that the equity position increased by 7 million, and this is as a result of the 398 million in profit that we received, against which we paid a preference dividend, which is really a dividend paid to the banks in terms of the subordinated loans. With that, I'd like to hand back to Chris.
Thanks,
Prashik.
The last couple of slides are quickly to talk about the future of SAA and to try and give you a sense of why I think SAA is so important to the economy and to the country as a whole. Our strategic value is through our mandate of being an African airline with global reach. And what that means is that we see ourselves as an African player now. No longer do we have aspirations for becoming a major international player. You know, we just don't have the strength or the size for that. But what we will do is maintain contact with each of the major continents, and we'll draw traffic in from those continents for our main purpose, and that is to move people around and within and from Africa. If you look at our international connections, we don't need to be everywhere, although we do account for close to 40% of international arrivals, and that's against every other major carrier coming into the country. We do in fact have an alliance with some of the biggest in the world. Star Alliance consists of some seriously large airlines, including United, including Continental shortly, including Air Nippon, Singapore, Lufthansa, and a number of large airlines. And through our alliances with them, through our co-share agreements with them, we were able to offer SAA tickets to 159 countries, close to 1,000 cities in the world, with over 17,000 flights each and every day. So it's an enormous network. Star is the largest network by far. Within Africa, we play a very different role. We don't have that many co-chairs, and we are the dominant player, the largest player on the continent. Almost 50% of all African arrivals from close to 19 countries within Africa are served by SAA. And that network allows us to create the connectivity that very few others can offer between Africa, South Africa, and the rest of the world. Our domestic activity, we're still together with our partners, our alliance partners, Airlink and SACS, by far the biggest network and also the most frequent network. What I mean by frequent is we have the most number of flights per day per destination by far. We also move just over half all cargo within SAA, all air cargo within SAA. Beyond that, our strategic value lies also in our employment. We employ 8,000 people, and if you include the full group, it's close to 10,000. But a considerable more number, bigger number of jobs are generated beyond that in our service industries. And I'm talking about the hotel industries, the tourism industries, the engineering industries, training industries, and so on, that serve SAA and the aviation sector. We're also very heavily involved in training and development of specific airline skills. And it's not just pilots. Clearly, we are involved in the onward training of existing pilots onto large jets, but also engineers in the technical area, and also specific accounting skills that you only find within the airline area, revenue accounting and revenue management skills, which are that skills that are outside the technical, fifth technical area. On the economic growth side, we are an enabler. No doubt cargo, air cargo is a very important enabler for economic growth because it moves critical and high value goods around very quickly and allows for quick infrastructural development. SAA's very presence, just by its very presence in international destinations, is in itself a sales point for SAA as the SAA brand. I'm talking about South Africa as a country. Because of the tail, because of the flag, because of the people that we employ, we, as a byproduct, are selling South Africa as a brand out there. Our contribution to the local economy is significant. We generate over 7 billion revenue, costs that are paid out to local suppliers, about 7 billion there. Of AXA's flying revenue, and I'm talking about flying revenue as opposed to shopping revenue and rental revenue and parking revenue and other sources of revenue are not related to aircraft. We provide 45% of AXA's revenue, and AXA uses that to develop airports, which has been doing incredibly effectively. Wuxia, Otambo International Airport, is probably one of the better airports in the world that I've seen now, as a result of AXA's efforts, which have been really superb. But they do that through revenue from people like us. And we've generated, well, we pay out about 2 billion in local salaries. And the Africa footprint, we have an important safety role that we play within Africa, and it's not philanthropic. It's because we fly there and we need to keep our own passengers and aircraft safe. But because we're able to do it, we are responsible for improving safety standards in a number of airports throughout the world, throughout Africa. Liberalization, at our meeting with the portfolio committee yesterday, we made a request through Parliament, and we'll make the same request here, that we need support in opening up African skies so that we can fly throughout Africa without hindrance. The moment air traffic legislation and conditions make it very difficult to fly more than minimal allowed frequencies that we're granted. But this is a different situation than the rest of the world. The rest of the world has opened its skies. So we're faced with open, unfettered competition from the major players internationally, where we're not big players. So we don't have the same ability to compete where we are a big player within our African context. It is time now, I think, for Africa to allow freedom of skies to African carriers in exactly the same way as Europe allows freedom of their skies to European carriers, and the US does the same in the United States. And then finally, we have the largest wireless network in Africa, which in itself allows us to transport South Africans into and out of Africa. And I personally have the experience of being an expat within Africa for just over 5 years. I spent 3 years in Kenya and 2 years in Nigeria. And in that period, I've seen the influx, or the outflux, the influx of South Africans into those areas where they're starting to build new businesses, they're building new malls, they're starting up new ventures, and they're transforming, particularly in labor, they're transforming the skyline out there. South Africans are now driving a lot of the economic growth within the continent. And SAA is responsible for taking them there and bringing them back here, making it easier for them to be there. Looking ahead, and until we get a little bit downturned a bit, the economic environment is far worse and far longer than we expected. First of all, it's no longer the V that we had hoped, and it was down and straight up again. It's going to be a U, and it might be a very wide U. What is fairly certain now, or becoming certain, is that we've reached the bottom. And I think the good news is that we're still alive, and we're still ahead of budget today. We haven't collapsed, but we've managed to sustain what has been the worst economic downturn. So that tells me that when the economic upturn does come, whenever it comes, but it will come, of that there's no doubt, we will be well positioned to take advantage of it. And I think it's important to understand that when this upturn does come, it's going to provide everybody with opportunities, and specifically it will provide the aviation industry, and we intend to be ready to take those opportunities. We intend to position ourselves to grab those chances with both hands, and we'll turn this airline into a major, major self-sustaining player going forward. We need to obviously focus on what we've achieved so far by maintaining costs are controlled, efficiency improvements are done, strategic effective procurement is put in place, that we're proactive in revenue management, we continue to get those yields up, that we use all the new distribution channels, channels to market that are being introduced over time now, and the new sort of IT-driven type of distribution. But one thing I have to say is that safety will always remain paramount in the airline. We're aware of the dangers of not getting safety remaining the most important target. I'm not saying safety is an issue, but we have seen a couple of accidents throughout the world, one here, and it makes us much more mindful of the need to keep safety paramount. 2010, we are energized by the prospect of 2010. Not only is it an opportunity to showcase SAA as an airline to the world, it's also an opportunity to showcase our country to the world, and I think we are very proud and very excited to be a part of that. Our operational plan has been completed. We are in the process of finalizing an agreement with Match, who you will probably know as the appointed agents for accommodation and transportation by FIFA. And we will be conducting a lot of the Match transportation for them on their behalf. And we'll also be able to extend our hours of operation to a full 24-hour operation. And I think the studies conducted by the Department of Transport and by Match themselves show that we are able now to fully meet the demand, the air traffic demand when 2010 starts. In conclusion, just in summary, then more than anything else, Prophet of 498, which, as I say, although it's a prophet in the income statement, the author accounts, a lot of it is to do with being affected by one-off items. The true untainted profit is in fact 1.5 billion. There's the two negatives and one positive, it comes to 398. But it's despite those three issues, unprecedented high fuel prices, hedging losses of over a billion, and the onset in the second half of this year, the worst recession we have ever seen, or any of us here have ever seen. The fact is that restructuring initiatives have over delivered 2.5 billion and have saved us, they've contributed and have created their profit. On-time performance is now where we want it to be, and SA is expected to break even for 2009-2010 year, but there are provisos. We can't do it if passenger and freight demand continues to fall. We can't do this yield continuously fine. Rand should not weaken and the fuel price must not rise any further. Those things unfortunately are not expected to happen. The possibility of the fuel is slightly more with slightly higher increase in the fuel price, the rest of them appear to be unlikely. So we're pretty confident about our future. We're pretty confident that we'll be able to sustain and grow this airline into something we can all be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris, as can see, Honorable Subande, you are the first one. Chris, I heard you in the presentation. I'm not sure whether you really do have challenges. It sounds like, you know, everything going very
to welcome Omama Kerala as the new chairperson on the board. But nevertheless, there are challenges. One, first of all, I'd like to remind our colleagues that there is a quite difference between the modern time and the ancient time. Previously, there were no means of accounting. They were using Exchequer Act. Now we are using TSMA. My question, therefore, will be based on why are you failing to account in terms of the TSMA? Section 51.1. Because it indicates that in 2006 and 2007, South African Airlines failed to comply with Section 51. And then also, again in 2007, 2008, 2009, yes, up until 2009, you also failed to account. Why at the same time? Another question, I'm a little concerned about the billions which we are losing. At the same time, we are failing to account, to comply, failing to comply, and there is a billions which we are losing. For the past two financial years, 2007 and 2008, South African Airways reported a total loss of nearly 2 billion rand. That's huge money. And it is believed that if that money was used on higher, what is it, energy cost and the aircraft leasing, why don't you buy our own? Why don't you buy our own? Because another question which will follow, are we able to sustain SAA? If we continue to lose so much money, huge money. And then also, which is a little bit concerning, is that why continuously? Is it, I would be very much grateful if sometimes you can give us stats of direct flights from South Africa to Europe. Because what I know, I've used the service frequently, supplies. There are very few flights which are going directly. Some of the flights, if of course, for an example, if you're going to Israel, Palestine, sometimes you must via, I'm making an example, you must via France, whatever. Why don't we really have means to go directly to God? We're spending a lot of money because to us, I mean, for ordinary people who are using flights, it's very good. It just becomes very expensive for this connection flight instead of using direct flight. And then also, I'm concerned about, yes, you were saying, you were talking about the restructuring. I don't know whether you have a risk management. If you do have a risk management, I would recommend also that you spend it because of these huge losses of money. For an example, with bonus deal, which was given to some of the people who were making, Mr. Ngula's team and other people, those 127 managers across the airlines, which were given extra reward. I don't know. But I believe that if we had an risk management, was going to highlight and advise you about some of these atrocities. And then again, about the issue of the allegation by the, I mean, the investigation about the a competition investigation from by the United States. Why? About the allegation of investing some of these money. Please, you can clarify on that one. Last one, but not this. I'm a bit concerned about the arrangement of some of countries. I don't know whether it's relevant to you or to somebody else who's supposed to clarify us. When you arrive at the airport, where you're supposed to go to, in particular Israel and Palestine, when you arrive at South African airport, you feel that already you are in Israel. About the behavior of some of this the security, which is, I believe is not South African security. But similar things doesn't happen to our country when we arrive to their country, when we are coming back. If maybe we can clarify on that, if maybe you do have an explanation. And lastly, I don't know whether I've raised this earlier on about the issue of leasing. Yes, I've raised this earlier on. You know, it's very painful because of this huge money which we are losing for leasing. Why don't you buy ours? Thank you.
Thank you, in the regarding the industry overview, I want to know the Upington area. You might mention that this is a place where aircraft is grounded, and I want to know, are we going in a direction to make it a dumping place in South Africa for other countries, or what is going on specifically in Upington? What happened to the 747 Boeings that we grounded at this stage? Are we selling it, or what happened to it? I'm coming from the Northwest Province, so Mbatu is close to my heart, the airport there, and I want to know, is it profitable for SAA? I don't think so at this stage. If you can give us a bit more information around the Mbatu Airport in the Northwest Province. Yeah, I want to know. How do you see it? The future of the airport. And then, Honorable Chair, something about the finance. I'm not a financial person, but something is not clear for me. You are talking about turnarounds, you are talking about we are ahead of the budget, and they are profit, but in the same time, you're asking for help from government. I want to know, and I read in the papers, in the one hand, we make a big profit, as you said, and on the other hand, you ask for help from government. If you can explain it to us, I would appreciate it.
And so then the last question is about the voyagers. If you're looking into that, there's a negative outcome from the voyager side. If you can explain that also to us. Thank you.
I sympathize with Verona if she had to go and have a meal with Asha. And she could take some frenies or something with her. Because I think, Chris, that's one of the areas that, that your airline needs to look at very seriously. That leads me to the point of the future. You've clearly done a huge amount of work to turn this business around. And we accept that that is the reality, that is sustainable, and we'll see that for the next financial year. But now we need to increase revenue. Your cost cutting is done, that's all history. You can't go any further, I assume. How are you going to increase revenue without an improvement in the economic situation throughout the world? I don't see a great deal of marketing taking place. It's a competitive industry, and to compete you've got to market, you've got to advertise. And very little has been said about that. You've said that you need to, when the upturn comes, capitalize on it, but how are we going to do that? It's all very well to say that SAA is advertising SAA, and that's great. That is an advantage. But how do you market SAA as opposed to Comair? Which then leads me on to the Comair. Comair, are you doing the maintenance? I assume you make a profit out of it. Why did Comair then make a profit after paying more for their maintenance than you yourself pay? I assume they make a profit, otherwise it wouldn't be a business. They don't have their government to bail them out. And I don't think the British government bails them out. So I just need some reassurance there about, if Comair can do it, what are they doing that might be better than you? Are you able to do some industrial espionage or something to check what indeed they might be doing better than you? And indeed that affects all the airlines. You do have the airline standards in terms of costs and passengers loading, what do you call it, bums on seats or whatever you want to call it. You refer to the energy bill as something like 50% of your costs. Well, I know that it's very high, but in the financials, it's 8.6 billion, total expenses 24.5 billion. That's about 30%. Now, somewhere you're wrong or I'm wrong. Probably I'm wrong. You know your financials better than I am. I haven't done a great deal of it. But I just need some reassurance of where I'm going wrong on that one. You said earlier in your presentation that your energy fuel costs were about 50% of the operating costs. Okay. I'm getting a different figure. Just need to be put right on that. Your deregulation plea fits in beautifully with our concept of market-driven economy. However, your own domestic market is fairly regulated, and would you like to see that deregulated to the same extent as you want to see the rest of Africa deregulated? Because right now you're flying to destinations, and my colleague and I talked about Mambato, which really is not a viable route, I wouldn't think. But you have a mandate, I think, to fly to some airports, which Comair and others say, well, we can't make a profit, we're not going there. And so deregulation has consequences. So if you could talk to us about that. The question of management and other bonuses, of course, is a vexed one, and I think it's been aired quite volubly and publicly. But what is the future hold? I mean, it's quite difficult for you, Pat. Sure, for others can talk about that from the board's point of view. I hope that your own contract now is somewhat different from previous ones in terms of that kind of thing. The increase in the domestic market, the question of SA Express and SA Airlink, we discussed at a previous meeting this week, I think, I lose track of meetings, the question of whether SA Express should be part of your network, rather than a separate public entity. I'd like your view on that, and whether it's the future, something that you will be canvassing, lobbying us for in the future or not. Madam Chair, I think that's it for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I forgot to ask another two questions. Number one, I think in terms of spending or budgeting, in your planning, you think maybe it's better to reduce the staff. If it's going to serve the purpose, maybe it will be correct. But at the meantime, I wanted you to find out why the FAA, the other side, the other hand is reducing the staff, while the other hand is outsourcing some of their responsibilities. Then at the same time, I wanted to find out that, as we all know, the number of people who resigned before accounting or auditing, I wanted to find out that in your investigation, if it found that Mr. So-and-so or Mr. Zimande was involved in 1, 2, 3, with the process of auditing or accounting, so what is going to happen? Is that particular person going to be called back to account, or what is going to happen? Thank you.
Thank you very much. From me, if maybe you can explain the destination to Africa. Why do we have to fly to, let's say, maybe you want to go to Nigeria, and you fly to through London. Why the destination to Africa is not a direct one? Before going to your destination, going to Nigeria, you go to via, let's say, London. And also on the personnel, the contractor, what can you elaborate on that? Why do you have so many contracts and you are not making the personnel permanent? And the other one that is actually worrying, your relationship with AXA, because most of the time people are losing their family. I know you fly from Cape Town to Joburg, and with your luggage checked in, you arrive in Joburg, you take your luggage, you find your stuff is missing. If maybe you can just explain, because when you query the AXA, you know, your relationship with AXA. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you for indulging me. There was one point I wished to ask, because that is a point of interest, really. On page 43, and I note that page 48 and 49 are identical pages, so your editors weren't too good at that one. But on page 43, there's the fuel levies and other recoveries are a separate line item. I've got my specs on, Madam Chair. Maybe I should change specs, but I did go to the optometrist about a month ago. And if you look at 48 and 49, the content is identical.
Can I quickly answer? If you look, it's actually one table costing two pages. Look at the headings.
You see, yes, actually, thank you for pointing that out to me.
They have been horrified for months. You've checked this thing so carefully. Good business day.
Yes, and I've only spent 10 minutes on it, but that's no excuse. I apologize for bringing up a stupid question. The fuel levies and other recoveries, why is it a separate line item? Even on ticket sales, why is it not just part of the actual ticket cost or the general revenue for the company? Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm covered
mostly by the colleagues of the group. There's one thing I would like to know. Did the government sit around the table with SAA board and ask or look at the possibility of privatizing? Most of the private airlines are making profit. I mean, it's Mango first time, you don't read the newspapers as financial problems. One of the biggest airlines is the National Virgin Active, private owned. I think let's make a study to say privatization versus, I mean, we are putting tax money into this program, which is showing profit, but it's good, it's a new team, new broom, sweep clean, and we will give the support that you need, but we have to highlight it. Another thing is that 747 aircraft, I think the acting CEO mentioned that it will be returned to wherever in compensation or to whatever the Airbus we are buying. But we're talking about 2013. I mean, the cost is what is lying there. I mean, if you can use it better to invest it somewhere else to get more interest on it and secure the deal, why must it be worth with the Airbus? Another thing is, can I don't actually get a strong point of job creation coming through. I mean, it was one of the sonar highlights of our president, is to create jobs. And if I can never look, there was, especially with personnel, it looks like jobs were shown when people were retrenched. And most of them are on contract. How secure, how sustainable is this? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Maybe sorry, Madam Chair, I'll just honourable Chair, I'll just respond to the two easy questions that were directed at me, and then I'll leave Chris and Kashik to answer the difficult ones. The first question was with regards to remuneration packages. I just want to say that obviously for us there are three elements which are critical. The first is it has to be fair, it also has to be competitive, it's a globally competitive industry. And lastly, but not unimportantly, that we want performance for that. The whole remuneration package is part of the review by KPMG to look at the history. Obviously for us there will be those elements, the three elements, and then once we get the KPMG report to look at what has happened in the past, we'll obviously look at how we can improve on that. And it would be a question of benchmarking it against industry as well as against other parastate or state government, because I think government itself has taken a very firm view about how it would like to see the remuneration package has been approached. And obviously, under the chair, the House would have a role to play in that overall government process. Then just on the question of privatization from the honourable member that I just think that on the question of privatization, I'm very happy that for the board, it's really government, it's not an ideological debate, because I think for a long time it was a silly debate that you, for ideological reasons, privatize or you nationalize and all of that. And I think it's really a question of what is the most efficient, the most cost-effective, for the best possible service that money can buy. Because some things a government entity just shouldn't run, and some things are just better if it stays in the public domain. And so that debate I think we will have, and again, I think here, as people part of the legislative process, it will be much more in your domain. We'll just try and run a good shot in line with the brief that we have. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It was also useful for you to put make a point forward. I think just one thing from a management point of view, obviously the privatization issue is a matter of ownership. The important issue for profitability is not who owns you, but it's how you run. And I think SAA attempts to run as a commercial operation, it is faced with commercial private sector competition that must run that way. How you are owned is only relevant as if you are treated differently from you being in the private sector. And so far, DPE treats us as any other public shareholder would. In fact, they probably provide us more funding than anybody else does. But we're comfortable with the way we treat it, and we're enabled, if you want, we're empowered to compete effectively in the market. If I go back to the first question, Honourable Simandi's question, the PSA issues are really around two areas. It's around a procurement process that lower level in years past to a level that meets the very high standards that the PFMA sets. We're not there yet. We are improving. We've got outside consultants. We've got new people involved, and we're giving it every bit of attention we can to get it to normality. I think the way that you phrased it sounds like you're concerned about the possibility of misstatements of numbers. That's not true. The county has been approved by the auditors. There's an unqualified audit report. The issue is pure compliance with the terms of the PFMA, and we can't say that has been done for two reasons. One is there are still issues to be sorted out in procurement, and they're mainly about improving delegations of authority so that the right number of signatures are obtained on contracts, for example. And the second issue is there are issues that have been raised, there are problems that have been raised within the KPMG forensic report, to which my chairman, Chair Annie Report referred to early on, and those are still under investigation, and therefore we can't comment on them before the final report is issued towards the end of the year. But as soon as that comes out, I give my assurances alongside that of the chairman that we will address them as quickly, as expeditiously, and as effectively as possible. The question about why don't we buy our own aircraft? I think it's really a matter of financing. The aircraft is very expensive asset. The 300 Airbus A340 in today's terms costs close to a billion rand for one, and we have 21 of them. So to buy that entire new fleet would cost SAA about 21 billion rand. SAA's net asset value is 2.5 billion. In other words, there's just no way SAA could buy its own aircraft. It has to finance it. And there are two ways that airlines finance their aircraft. They either lease them through lessors, which one tends to do with older aircraft, older generation aircraft, or you buy them with export credit agency support. There's a company called Exim Bank, or Export Import Bank from the USA, that supports Boeing aircraft. There's a company called COFAT that supports the French aircraft. And they will provide you with a guarantee, which you then go to a bank and you raise the money on. But then you pay interest, which is much the same as paying lease. So it's much of a muchness. The two ways have different advantages and different areas where they become more appropriate. But you just simply, nobody has the money to go and shell out cash for new aircraft. They're just too expensive, unfortunately. But I take your point. And we do look at the most cost-efficient way of leasing aircraft or owning aircraft as possible in each case. Are we able to sustain SA? That is my message to you, that we believe as an executive, and I think the board also, well, it's still early days, but I'm sure the board at this stage feels that there's good reason to believe that we are sustainable. Stats direct to airport. Why don't we go directly to every African airport, or to every European airport? Honourable Sabandio, the problem really is that on the one hand, we are trying to decide whether we are an instrument or an organ of state that provides access as widely as possible, or are we a commercial airline? And the mandate that's been given to us by the Department of Public Enterprises and our current mandate under which we operate is to be self-sustainable. Unfortunately, that means that we cannot operate routes that do not return profit to us, that do not give us a return. And it's just not possible to operate to every single European airport that people want to travel to. The only way we can do it is to operate in co-chair or via a central hub point like we do now. So the operation, for example, if you want to fly to Istanbul, we will shortly have a code share. We can buy an SA ticket on the SA code. You can fly direct to Istanbul on Turkish Airlines. The alternative will be fly on SAA to either Munich or to Frankfurt, and then catch a connecting flight on Frankfurt directly to Istanbul. But an example, we used to fly directly to Paris. We used to fly directly to Zurich. Both those airports could not be sustained because of lack of profitability, and we had to shut them down as part of the restructuring to bring this airline back to profitability, to bring this airline back to sustainability. It's a choice between those two, unfortunately. Do we have risk management? We have a very effective risk management. I'm going to ask my colleague from DPE to comment because they judge that, they monitor that very closely. Can you perhaps say a couple of words, Dr. Andrew, Dr. Saul?
You caught me a little bit by surprise, but let me the risk assessment process with respect to the shareholder really works by SAA providing us with a risk assessment. We in turn do our own risk assessments of the airline. Generally, there's differences, probably because the basis under which we do those risk assessments is different. They focus slightly more on operational risk. We focus slightly more on strategic or shareholder risk. we go into a process of evaluating the respective risks with their risk management team. So it is quite a rigorous process. They also have a risk management process that is embedded within the airline that goes down a little bit further than ours. So we're fairly comfortable that the risk management process is clear. However,